Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. I'm Jason Powell here with a review of the November 28th edition of WWE Raw. Before we get into Raw, I got to give a quick plug to the Sean Daivari interview that I conducted on Monday afternoon. Sean, a former WWE, TNA, and Ring of Honor wrestler, and he really went in depth regarding the Muhammad Hassan and Daivari days, and also just his exit from WWE, his departure from TNA, Ring of Honor as well, and he also talked about a documentary that he's involved with. He is going to be one of the people featured in a Morgan Spurlock documentary that is being produced by Jason Bateman and Will Arnett, and they both also, it sounds like, are pretty involved in that project. Plus, he took part in the Wrestling Retribution Project taping, formerly the Wrestling Revolution Project, Jeff Cass's group, and he revealed some details about that and how the taping went, some interesting stuff there. And also TNA's offshoot, the All Wheels Wrestling Project that TNA is doing. They filmed the pilot already, and he provides some details on that. Plus, he talked about getting a phone call from CM Punk, who at the time was looking for advice regarding whether or not he should take an offer that TNA had made for him to become a regular with that company, or take a WWE developmental deal. And he reveals what he told Punk, and you know, we all know exactly how that situation played out, but he gets into why he gave Punk the advice he did and a lot more. It's a 2-hour interview, very satisfied with it. Sean was an open book, and I really enjoyed it, and we have received really good feedback thus far. It is available exclusively to .NET members. I'll be running a 15-20 minute preview of that audio for everyone, so you can get a taste of it, and if you like it, hopefully you'll sign up and listen to the full 2 hours. In order to sign up, just head on over to ProWrestling.net. You can't miss the sign-up page. It's right there on the right side of your screen, and if you just want to sign up and listen to this interview, try it out for a month. The price is $7.50. If you want to jump on board and lock yourself in for a full year and save yourself some money, and in the process gain access to, and you will either way, if you go monthly or annual, the annual fee is $5.50 per month is what it works out to. But either way, if you, in addition to the Sean Daivari interview, you'll hear recent interviews with Shane Hurricane Helms. He also joined me for about 2 hours. PJ Polacco joined me, just incredible, former ECW champion, for about 85 minutes. Past interviews with former WWE creative team member Court Bauer. Seth Mates, another creative team member, has joined me for WrestleMania audio reviews for a couple of past WrestleManias. Former TNA creative team member Dutch Mantel has stopped by twice, including his first interview since leaving TNA he granted to me over at ProWrestling.net. So, again, if you're listening on iTunes and you want to sign up, take advantage of it, head on over to ProWrestling.net, look for that sign-up page, and you'll gain almost instant access to those interviews, plus ad-free access to ProWrestling.net, access to the members forum, the ability to write your own blog, and much more, and including the first look at .NET news. So there it is. There's the plug. I hope you'll take advantage of it, because I really did enjoy interviewing Sean Daivari, and again, the feedback has been very good thus far. Plus, later on today, about 4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern, I am scheduled to appear on the PW Torch livecast over at blogtalkradio.com. So if this free audio isn't enough for you, you can get a little bit more later today. 4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern, blogtalkradio.com. And again, it's the PW Torch livecast. Your calls are welcome for that first hour. So check that out as well. Now, as for last night's Raw, I should also warn you guys, if you can't tell, if I sound congested, it's because I am. Thanksgiving's great. I love it's, you know, probably my favorite holiday, just because you don't have, unless you choose to go out on Black Friday, which has suddenly become Black Thanksgiving as well. You know, you don't have all the gifts to buy and all the insanity that can go along with Christmas. Don't get me wrong, I love Christmas, but Thanksgiving is just kind of laid back. You get together with family, count your blessings, and watch some football and eat a great meal. I love that aspect of it. The problem is you get around too much family, somebody gets you sick, you're eating off other people's silverware, you don't know how well they're washing it, and that's what's happened to me. All right, I have no idea if I picked up this cold at Thanksgiving or somewhere else. But I'm blaming my family because I don't think they're listening to this. If they are, I take it all back. But Raw last night, I thought was a pretty good effort. I thought this was much better than some of the stuff we've been getting lately. Granted, they didn't hype anything for TLC. It's like that pay-per-view doesn't exist right now. I'm curious to see if they kick in the hype for that tonight on SmackDown because, I think so much time was dedicated to trying to drive people to the Tuesday live special that they're doing that they never, that they just chose not to hype TLC. Perhaps that hype will begin tonight. If not, you know, obviously next week WWE is really going to have to start, kicking things into gear with Raw hype for the TLC pay-per-view that, there's still a little bit of time. It's December 18th, I believe, is the date of that show, so they still have some time. But I thought we might see some last night. I thought we'd at least have some idea of where things were heading storyline-wise into that pay-per-view. Right now, boy, I'm not quite sure. Not that that's a bad thing necessarily. There are some different scenarios I could see for CM Punk, John Cena, and whatnot, and we'll talk about those as we get into this. But they opened up with, the opening montage, and Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler on commentary. Nice to see a two-man booth rather than the three. As much as I want Jim Ross to be the play-by-play voice, I just don't need a crowded three-man booth. I'd much rather have Jim Ross on play-by-play and whoever. I'm not even going to endorse Jerry Lawler at this point. I mean, they're a good team. But, whoever not named Booker T on color commentary would be great. But if we can't get that, hey, I'll take the two-man booth over Cole, Lawler, and Booker especially. Justin Roberts, they got things off to a pretty good start. They immediately played video footage of CM Punk and Del Rio from Survivor Series, and then Justin Roberts quickly introduced Roddy Piper, and the ring was all decked out for Piper's Pit. And Piper, I think I enjoyed this more than most people. I didn't think this was like the best delivered segment or the most memorable segment that we've seen involving Roddy Piper. I've had some people tell me that they just felt like he was overly scripted. You know what though? If you're looking for a rambling, borderline incoherent Roddy Piper promo, this wasn't it, nor was it the time for it. I don't even know when the time is, but some people get into that, and that's cool. I certainly enjoy Roddy Piper's work, but we've seen some rambling promos since he left the business full time that just kind of sit there shaking your head. This was an angle involving John Cena to say, and I thought an important one, and therefore I thought you had to script Piper. You don't want him going all over the place, and it looked like Cena had to rein him in a couple of times, and Cena did a really nice job. And I thought Piper also did good work with given what he had to what he was given to work with. And so I liked this segment. Basically, the idea was that Piper was trying to get John Cena to acknowledge that the fans booing him is starting to get to him. Cena defending himself a little bit. I like it because it now opens the door to people paying a little more attention to how Cena reacts to different things. And my complaint about Cena recently has been that, he's out there getting booed, and no matter what happens, win or lose, he's always got that smirk on his face. And, it's kind of his thing that he doesn't always give in to the boos and whatnot, and I understand that. But it's kind of taken some of the fun away of the reaction that he's getting when he just takes it all in stride. It's taken the meaning away from WWE Championship wins and losses when he just takes wins and losses in stride. And so this, I think they're trying to set things up now so that we pay a little more attention to John Cena's reaction. Will we get some from him? Will he start to, show little signs that maybe the crowd is getting to him? Or was this just WWE's way of having Cena remind people that it doesn't get to him? I don't know, but I like that they're actually going down this road, acknowledging the possibility, at least, that that the crowd is getting to Cena. Now, I don't quite understand, Piper's lines about, if Cena doesn't tell the fans what he really thinks, it's going to cost him the biggest match, at WrestleMania with The Rock. I'm not quite sure You know, they didn't really do a good job of explaining that. I guess in my mind, I'm able to just to rationalize it going, even if it was a scripted line, thinking, well, it's Roddy Piper. He's kind of out there. But I just thought it was very well done. And I like the, you know, the storyline potential coming out of this segment. Cena did a nice job of kind of standing his ground and pointing to the Rise Above Hate, talking about his three Make-A-Wish wishes that he granted earlier in the day, the armed services, and he came out of this looking good. Now, this wasn't like the most anti-Cena crowd. It was probably more along the lines of a 50-50 crowd, which is what you tend to get when Rock's, you know, a couple weeks removed from TV, basically. You know, if Rock is around, then Cena's going to get booed, you know, by 90% of the fans at least. If he's not around, then, you know, the fans kind of warm up to Cena a little bit. You know, he certainly had his haters there. This would have played much better had it been an entirely negative John Cena crowd. But I thought it came off well. I enjoyed the segment. I thought it was one of the highlights of the show. I do question putting it on as early as they did. I give them credit on one hand for hyping something strong in advance that this is going to open the show, doing it online, getting people paying attention to that, and, you know, hopefully tuning in early is the goal, I'm sure. But by the time the show was over, it didn't seem all that important anymore. I'm all for putting the championship match on last. I'm not saying it should have went there, but maybe the start of the second hour, you know, which typically does high ratings anyway. You want people paying as much attention to this as you can. But I like the segment, I think, more than most people based on feedback I've gotten thus far. There were consistent ads for SmackDown, the live SmackDown show that they're holding tonight. It'll air on Sci-Fi at 7 Central, 8 Eastern. Very good job of making, you know, just reminding people that it's happening. And not just in the form of videos, which is always my biggest critique, because I do think there's a lot of us that once those videos start playing and it's clear it's an advertisement for something, we just kind of zone out. This one's a little different. They had Mick Foley involved and were able to hype the cage match with Daniel Bryan and Mark Henry. But they also had a segment in which Henry and Bryan got to hype their match and that show as well. Mick Foley also coming out. So I want to see more of that. It doesn't just have to be when there's a live special. I'm not saying you dedicate that much time to SmackDown on Raw every week, but there's no reason you can't get, well, other than they don't book well enough in advance. But it'd be nice if, you know, if there's actually a match advertised for the following week on SmackDown, if we get a promo segment from one or both of the guys involved. Even if it's a, you know, I've endorsed the idea of taking the UFC approach, cheating a little bit, but filming something at SmackDown with whoever those wrestlers are, airing it on the big screen, acting as if it's live via satellite. Now, UFC doesn't cheat with that, at least as far as I know. I don't think they do. But, you know, in WWE world, you can get away with it. And, you know, it does, like I say, it doesn't have to last long, but it beats the quick commercial that I think so many of us just zone out and don't always catch, don't always pay that much attention to. But we got John Morrison making his entrance, and he was attacked on the stage by The Miz, who went Scott Steiner mode on him, using a steel pipe to slam over Morrison's leg repeatedly, and Morrison still worked the match. It was The Miz defeating John Morrison in a Falls Count Anywhere match via ref stoppage in 3 minutes and 30 seconds. There were a lot of rumblings that it would be Brodus Clay who would take out Morrison as Morrison's, you know, last scheduled appearance on Raw or for WWE in general. Didn't happen. It was The Miz. And, you know, I think would it have been memorable if Brodus had been the guy? Sure. But they're trying to give Miz a bit more of an edge, and so I think that this was necessary. I'm still not sold on Miz being this vicious, ruthless heel. It's, you know, I'm not there right now with him, but it's going to take some time. He just doesn't have that look to him. I think that's a real issue. But at least they're making the effort to add another layer to the Miz character. Because, you know, one of my issues with the Miz and that character has been that since he put on the boots and the trunks, he really hasn't evolved much since then. You know, he's had a good run, but at some point these characters have to evolve and move on to the next thing. And I just think that they've reached the limit, or they've reached the peak with Miz being that character. You know, and not that he can't go back to it and have success, but you need to give people something different, and they're trying that. So it wasn't, you know, again, I'm still not sold on Miz in this role, but it's going to take some time in this, you know, with the attack on Truth last week and now the attack on Morrison. They said Truth's going to be out several weeks. Of course, he's got a wellness policy suspension that they're not going to acknowledge on television. And Morrison, with his deal apparently expiring and him being out of the company, obviously, you know, that it's going to look like Miz put two guys on the shelf for an extended period of time. So a good start. Miz's promo after the match, so I felt like he was channeling Chris Jericho, just that slow delivery. And, it was effective for Jericho. I just think we've seen so many guys take that approach since then that it doesn't feel unique. It doesn't feel original. I did get a kick out of Jerry Lawler talking about how Miz is an Iceman. And then he said he's ice cold. And then they went right to a Stone Cold Steve Austin DVD plug. Kind of awkward timing there. Second match was Kelly and Alicia Fox beating the Bella Twins in 135. For God knows what reason, Beth Phoenix and Natalya just jogged out, jogged around the ring, and jogged back up the ramp and headed backstage. I'm like, what? I have no idea what they're trying to accomplish here. Just seemed corny. Basically, Alicia has replaced Eve as Kelly's BFF of the month for her endless series of wins over the Bella Twins. Yeehaw. We got a Sheamus video package, and then John Laurinaitis was on the phone telling Brodus Clay that he'd see him next week. David Otunga was there to question when he's finally going to let Clay compete. Laurinaitis said Brodus is a killer, and the longer he waits, the more dangerous he will be. He says, I'm actually doing Brodus a favor. Okay, I like that explanation, but we need video packages again. They've been dicking around on this so long that those video packages are just like a distant memory at this point. Either debut the guy in a meaningful way or start playing the video packages to remind people of, what they have to look forward to, who this guy is. Those were some good video packages. So it's time. It's time to reintroduce even the video packages, in my opinion. Then we went to Alberto Del Rio and Ricardo Rodriguez, telling Laurinaitis of what happened at Survivor Series was just a setback. And Del Rio saying he would walk out as WWE champion. CM Punk entered the room and told a bunch of basically Google statistics. About 156,000 results came up when he entered Laurinaitis and Spineless. I think it was three times that amount came up for Del Rio and Boring. And then when he said when he entered David Otunga's name, just a bunch of stuff about some lady named Jennifer Hudson came up. So clever line at the end. Not sure everything else was worth it, but Punk ended up leaving. Otunga said that first he said the title isn't going anywhere, and then he left the room. Otunga said it sounded like a threat. Laurinaitis said that if Punk got himself intentionally disqualified, he would lose the WWE Championship. The match stipulation addition did nothing for me. I'm like, why would Punk intentionally disqualify himself? We've never seen anything like that from Punk in this version of his character. It makes no sense. I guess they just wanted to maybe create the impression that, something screwy could be happening here. Better stay tuned. This isn't just going to be Punk going over on Del Rio, even though ultimately it was. After commercial break, we got Dolph Ziggler with Vicky Guerrero defeating Randy Orton in a non-title match in 11:50. Wade Barrett was on commentary during this. We got a pop-up box promo from Dolph Ziggler admitting that he's a show-off. This is just, match-wise, it was entertaining. Again, these two work very well together. It was nice to see Ziggler not lose, but this wasn't like some big breakout moment for Dolph Ziggler, because it was Wade Barrett distracting Orton that led to Ziggler hitting his finisher and getting the win. So, it was nice, but it wasn't. And there's the anonymous general manager chiming in. I don't know if you guys can hear that, but that would be my girlfriend driving me nuts in the middle of the day because she has nothing better to do than text me from work. Leave me alone, woman. All right. No, I did not text that to her because I would be left alone on the couch for about probably a month. But as far as Ziggler goes, I don't like the way that it's just now he's the show off and everybody's talking about it. That's something I think needs to feel like it happens more organically where it's not just, oh, he's got a new nickname and they're going to shove it down our throats. It's kind of a new new addition to his gimmick. It's just happening way too quickly. Give me some examples of it, and then, make it seem like out of the blue, Michael Cole or Lawler dubs him that. And it just, 2-3 weeks now, he's the show off. And I don't, I really have high hopes for Dolph Ziggler being a main event player for WWE. I think he's shown that he can handle it in the ring, and I think he's showing that he is improving as rapidly as anyone on the microphone these days. And that was always the thing that I felt was holding him back. But show off, is that main event gimmick? I don't know. He did a handstand after the match to show off, I guess. It doesn't scream main event. I don't know. Maybe it will grow on me, but right now it really does feel forced. As far as Orton goes, the guy continues to do business unlike any other main eventer in WWE. He's putting people over on a regular basis, and he's not really losing anything as a result of it. He's setting himself up with future opponents. I really give credit to Randy Orton and WWE, whoever is coming up with this, and having him lose on a not weekly basis, but he's doing some key jobs that are helping elevate people. Like I said, I don't think Dolph gained a lot from this, but it set up gives Orton a kind of a revenge factor with Ziggler if he wants it, and also plays into his feud with Wade Barrett, which I assume we're going to see play out at TLC, that being Orton and Barrett. We got the announcement, again, consistent hype for the WWE Championship match. They're doing a good job with that. Last week it was John Cena and how he would respond coming out of Survivor Series that they kept teasing throughout the show, and this week it was the championship match. So I like that. After commercial break, Michael Cole introduced Daniel Bryan as the biggest hypocrite in the history of WWE. Cole said that Bryan has been given the opportunity to battle Mark Henry in a cage match. Bryan stood up for himself and said that he hadn't been given anything. He earned the championship by winning a four-way match. Bryan said he'd hoped that he would have earned some respect given his recent accomplishments. Cole got fired up and said that he can't respect Bryan for trying to cash in on an injured champion on SmackDown. And he said he's a liar and a hypocrite for saying he would wait until WrestleMania to cash in. And they aired the footage of that angle. Bryan grew a little more intense, and he said that his plans changed when Henry tried to end his career. And he showed him that the Money in the Bank briefcase or contract doesn't guarantee anything. And he said he had an opportunity, and he took it. And he added that becoming World Heavyweight Champion is more important to him than headlining WrestleMania. That line scared me. I'll get to it in a second. Henry ended up walking onto the stage and scoffed at the notion of Bryan beating him, and said Bryan should be ashamed for going after a defenseless man. And he also said Teddy Long should be ashamed for booking him in their match on Tuesday, even though he's injured. And Henry said it doesn't matter, though. Even if he's on one leg, Bryan can't beat him. Daniel Bryan headed up to the stage where Henry was and just kind of took a shot at Henry's injured leg, and Henry was limping all over, and Bryan said, we'll find out whether he can win tomorrow night. Good segment. Didn't blow me away. I really like the idea of giving these SmackDown guys time to hype their matches. And they did that, but I can't say that I came out of this really fired up about the match. I like that, Henry's been so dominant, and Bryan's been, well, he's been beaten by Henry on a regular basis recently. So I do like that they established that there's something, an injury with Henry that could make this match different. Will it lead to a title change? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. What I don't like about the line about becoming World Heavyweight Champion being more important than Mania has nothing to do with is Mania bigger than the world title or any of that. It just scares me that they're not going to hold off. They're not going to show patience. They're not going to wait until WrestleMania for Daniel Bryan to cash in. Either he's going to win the championship before then. That might be their way to appease people. He's giving him a brief title run, or he's going to cash in and fail. So I hope that's not the case, because I really would like to see them just show that restraint and wait until WrestleMania for Daniel Bryan to challenge Mark Henry or whomever is, or whoever's WWE champion or World Heavyweight Champion. I'm sorry, but, And I mean, let's face it, this WrestleMania is headlined by The Rock and Cena. That's what's selling this show. Yeah, Undertaker's streak is going to help. And, you know, everything else, though, other than those two things, seem like it's going to be icing on the cake. Maybe Punk in a hot title match or something, too. But if you can ever get away with just giving a match that may not capture the imagination of all the fans out there, you don't need it to because of everything you have on top. I would go with that and hope that you can create a star in Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania, but we'll see if that actually happens. I'm really suspect now. We got Zack Ryder beating Jack Swagger with Vicky Guerrero in 3:20, and so just Michael Cole healing on Ryder. Swagger went for a Vader bomb. It was an odd spot because Ryder had his hand where it shouldn't have been, and in the corner, he was lying on the ground. He had his hand out. Looked like Swagger stepped on it or was concerned that he was going to step on it and just stopped what he was doing. And Ryder ended up coming back a short time. Well, first Swagger, then he, you know, they did a sequence where he hit that or went for that same spot again. Ryder got his feet up and hit the Rough Rider to get the pin. So Zack Ryder wins a match. Swagger continues to lose. And could someone explain to me, you know, why Vicky Guerrero even continues to manage Jack Swagger when he loses so much? Wasn't that kind of the thing? Was it Swagger talked her into being his manager, and it looks like the, you know, Vicky and Dolph might be on the outs because of it? Well, now, you know, Dolph is on the rise and Swagger's just losing on a weekly basis. He's the glorified jobber of the Raw brand right now. It's pretty sad. After commercial break, we got the latest video for Kane's return. And another good video. It wasn't the one that played last week. Clearly Kane. I mean, and they even at the end put Kane resurrected as the caption for this. They also did another video for the January 2nd return. To me, it looked, you know, I could go either way on this. I think it's either Taker or Jericho. I lean ever so slightly to Jericho, and I could be overthinking this. Simply because it looks like they want you to think it's a Taker video, the black and white, the eerie kid, you know, the ball rolling across the floor. But if you listen to what the kid is saying, you know, he's talking about a thief in the night and taking back what's his. Jericho on Twitter has been playing up that, you know, all these people are stealing from him, that he's the best in the world, and people are stealing his moves and whatnot. That, you know, and it's Jericho. You would think that if Chris Jericho were coming back, obviously, you know, he's made it clear. He's not going to tell anyone. He's going to mislead people. And I just wonder if this is Jericho trying to make it look like an Undertaker return video, yet at the same time, you know, wanting it to make sense so he has that dialogue in there that makes it seem like it's him. So I lean toward Jericho. You know, Taker wouldn't stun me, but I really am starting to wonder if this is Chris Jericho. I know he said, you know, he's got Hollywood commitments coming up in January. You know, seeing is believing with Jericho. Maybe he does, but, you know, when you make it clear to people that, you know, you're going to mislead, you're not going to tell people, you want it to be a surprise, well, then I think, you know, you certainly open the door to people questioning, even if you tell them something, you know, questioning whether you're shooting straight in that case. And then it was time for a Piper's Pit recap, followed by Mick Foley coming out dressed like Santa Claus, and he basically did his own version of A Christmas Carol regarding the SmackDown special. And I was really, when Mick Foley arrived in the limo, I was intrigued when he returned to Raw by the end of that show with the intentionally awful "This Is Your Life, John Cena" segment. You know, that really did a number on my whatever anticipation I had for Mick Foley as a character returning to WWE. And, you know, it was like, well, maybe they're going to follow up with this and he's going to get revenge on Rock and Cena. For, you know, Rock for giving him the rock bottom, Cena for laughing about it while, you know, standing over the fallen Foley, and nothing. You know, I thought they were going to name a special referee of the Survivor Series match. I thought then when they didn't, I thought, well, okay, maybe he's going to interfere in that match and help Truth and Miz get a win to set up, you know, more bickering between Rock and Cena. That didn't happen. You know, we've seen WWE web pieces. He doesn't seem all that bothered by it. He's just back to being happy-go-lucky Mick Foley. So unless something changes, and I hope it does, it just, And we're kind of getting that Mick Foley that I think a lot of people grew tired of. And he's obviously, you know, I don't want to see Mick Foley in the ring wrestling on a regular basis, and I don't think he has any desire to. But I think he can be more valuable than the way they're using him. It's just this almost he's just meaningless right now. And I mean, using him as a host of SmackDown, sure, it's you know, he's still fresh, but just with no storyline direction or anything, you know, maybe something will change. But for right now, I can't say that I'm all that impressed with the job WWE has done with Mick Foley since he returned. Then we got Josh Matthews interviewing CM Punk, who said it's obvious Laurinaitis is dealing from the bottom of the deck, and he said Laurinaitis can kiss his bottom. And he said, and by that I mean he can kiss my ass. And he looked in the camera and repeated the line. So not too PG, I guess. Not that I care. After a commercial break, another SmackDown ad aired, and then we got the main event. CM Punk defeating Alberto Del Rio with Ricardo Rodriguez to retain the WWE Championship in 15-20. Again, the stipulation was that Punk would lose the title if he were intentionally disqualified. This started pretty slow. It wasn't all that exciting early on, but it really built to a nice climax. These two really do nice false finishes together. It just teases near falls. And there were a couple more spots again. You know, they really had me fooled at Survivor Series with some of their near falls down the stretch. And it played out that way again here. They kind of did the Eddie Guerrero spot. Del Rio brought a chair into the ring. Punk ended up with it. And, you know, he kind of tossed it to Punk for whatever reason, I think, to set up that DQ idea, but Punk tossed it right back to him, and Del Rio just stood there while Punk laid flat on his back. So I guess that's why they added that stipulation, was just for that spot, I guess. It didn't really do much for me. But the match itself did, and the finish then, so as Del Rio standing there at the chair, the referee turns around and starts bickering with Del Rio. Punk then rolls up Del Rio, and I thought, oh, here's the finish. Nope. Del Rio came back and ended up getting, I think he got a near fall of his own, and he went to slam Punk on the exposed turnbuckle that Del Rio had taken the pad off, and then Punk hoisted him up in GTS position, and instead of dropping him on his knee, just dropped him on the exposed turnbuckle, and then covered Del Rio, and the referee counted to three, and Ricardo threw a fit and was trying to tell the referee what happened with the turnbuckle to get that DQ. Punk just picked up Ricardo and gave him the GTS, and Punk celebrated on the ropes to close the show. And we got one final plug for the Tuesday SmackDown special. Again, a good main event. They did a nice job of making this seem special, trying to make it seem like more than just a typical Raw main event, which they should. Anytime the WWE Championship is involved, it really should be played up as a major thing. And I don't know where they go with Del Rio from here. You know, you had Punk again talking about how boring he is, which I don't like that. Even if that's Vince McMahon's perception of the character, it's like, well, then make him less boring. Do something with them. You know, they really had something with Del Rio. I think there were a lot of people who really enjoyed that character early on, but it's another character that really hasn't evolved. You know, I think evolution with Del Rio is now that he doesn't talk about his destiny. That's the only thing that's really changed. You know, I'd like to see more, just more character development around. I mean, he's just, right now, he's just kind of he's the really rich Mexican guy who has servants and he drives sports cars. That's about it. You know, I'm not saying you need to add, a ton of new dimensions to this character, but something, anything, make me feel like I'm not just seeing a guy who's playing a character, but rather a character that's evolving and that you're intrigued by, and we're not getting him. We're just being told that he's boring and he's not good on the mic. So I don't care for that. I think Alberto Del Rio, yeah, he needs to improve in the ring. But I don't think he's so bad that you can't use him as a main event talent. I just think he's got some things to work on, not down the stretch, but early on. You know, the early minutes of Del Rio matches, unless, you know, if it's a longer match, are kind of dull. It's almost like they lull you into, they just lull you to sleep almost, but then, you know, once the middle section of the match into the finish occurs, that's when he really turns it on and does a good job. So I enjoy Del Rio. I hope we get more from him. Will we get Punk versus Del Rio in a rematch? Are they going to try to set that up? Will it be Punk versus The Miz, perhaps, coming, now that The Miz is taking people out? Will it be Cena versus The Miz? Well, is that the direction they're going in? I'm not quite sure what they're doing with TLC. I threw out the idea last week, I think it was, that I'm not crazy about four-way matches, but what about all four of those guys? Punk, Del Rio, Miz, and Cena in some sort of a four-way match. But I don't know if WWE wants to put Cena and Punk back in the ring this quickly in the same match together, because they do need to protect those matches. They have very few matches that seem special, and that one right now doesn't. But if you give it some time and remind people of how great their previous encounters have been, it could be, and so that's kind of the dilemma. So I'm not sure what they're doing for TLC just yet. I can't say I'm sitting around putting a ton of thought into it either, especially when they haven't even, I don't even know if they've advertised TLC on Raw, period. It's kind of strange, but like I say, maybe that will change tonight. Speaking of tonight, Chris Shore and Jake Barnett will have live coverage of the WWE SmackDown special on ProWrestling.net, so you can follow along with their live coverage. And then I believe the two of them will be teaming up either later tonight or on Wednesday for an audio review of that show. That will be a member-exclusive audio review that they will be doing along with the Countdown show. Jake got some audio coming up. Jake will be teaming up with Will Pruitt for the .NET Countdown show. They look back at the past week, the top five best and the top five worst moments of the week, and it's a fun listen. So that one is generally available exclusively to .NET members as well. Don't forget, coming up on Thursday is the .NET Weekly Audio Show, where Chris Shore and I analyze all the news of the week. That show often includes first-run news that hasn't been reported anywhere, including .NET on the actual website. It's our flagship audio show. It runs anywhere from 90 minutes to over 2 hours in length, and definitely a major perk of .NET membership, along with that the new interview that I just conducted on Monday, Cyber Monday, with Sean Daivari. A two-hour interview, again, available exclusively to ProWrestling.net members. So I hope that if you're listening out there on the free side of things, I hope you'll take advantage of this being a great time to sign up with all of those perks. Again, just head on over to ProWrestling.net. You can't miss the sign-up page. And for as little as $5.50, if you take that annual option, you can have access to all of those features. And then don't forget, assuming my voice holds up, I will be on the PW Torch livecast this afternoon at 4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern on blogtalkradio.com. Your calls are welcome during that first hour. We get a lot of them on Tuesday, so call in early if you can. And if you're a .NET member, hey, please let me know. It's always nice to hear from you guys when you call into that show. So that's going to do it for today. I hope you guys all had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday and didn't manage to catch a cold like I did. I'm not sure when I'll be back here aside from the Blog Talk show on the free side of things. So I guess until next time, thank you very much for supporting ProWrestling.net, and I will talk to you soon, maybe. Take care.